Ramsey TV.
You think I may have forgotten where I left off in Romans chapter 11, but I assure you I have not. And here at the end of the week, I'm going back to Romans chapter 11, where I left off. It's been a while, I know that, since I launched into Romans 9, 10, and 11, that section of Romans, that special little section in Romans, where Paul talks about the fortunes and future of his beloved nation, Israel. And in chapter 11 is a very difficult section where people read it and they get worried. What, boughs are broken out so that I may be grafted in, but what if I don't believe that I'll be hewn off the tree just like Israel was? People get worried about this, thinking it's an individual thing. It's not, it's national. Gonna get into all of that, as you would expect. This is Martin Zender speaking to you from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And yes, Trump has coronavirus. You might as well tell me Trump has the flu or Trump has a cold. But of course, the world's going to make a big deal because this fear culture has just instilled in everyone this fear, fear, fear of getting something, fear of dying, fear of getting any virus, fear of getting a cold, fear of getting the flu, fear of dying. That's the bottom line of this whole thing. There's a political push to make people afraid, because when people are afraid, as I've told you, they can be controlled. And if you can do many, it's not hard to make people afraid. You just touch the nerve. What is the nerve? The fear of death. Is the scripture verse in Hebrews, is it people who their whole lives were subject to the fear of death? And it runs their lives, this fear. It ruins their lives because they're constantly running around getting checked. What the hell is Trump doing or anybody doing getting checked every 10 minutes? Please check me, see if I'm sick. Why don't you just wait till you're sick if you want to do something about it? I mean, I just don't understand this test culture. No, that's a little pun there, test culture. Didn't mean that to be, but everybody wants to know what they have. Why? Why don't you just ask God to tell you the day you're going to die? Assuming you're going to die, but none of us are going to die. We're going to be snatched away. But yeah, you see what I'm saying? Who wants to know? Who the hell wants to know? Why do people... I know that mediums are wrong and these people are in touch with the dark world and everything, but why are people inquiring? Why do people go, there's a stupid palm reader down here on 17th Street. Oh, down there on 17th Street. Why would you go to a palm reader? I want to know if my children are going to die in a car crash next week. And the palm reader says, yes, indeed, your children, all of them are going to die in a car crash next week. Not the same one, but just on the same day. Good luck. Now, what are you going to do? Go to lunch? After that, go to Chipotle? Even if it's fake, which the whole freaking thing is, you're filled with foreboding. Why subject yourself to it if it's fake anyway? But if you think it's real, I don't understand why you would go, because you're hoping to get good news. What kind of chance are you taking to go to a medium or a palm reader hoping to get good news when there's a pretty damn good chance you're going to get horrible news? But I suppose that the palm readers, if they want to get paid, they better get paid up front. You better get paid up front. And I'm not sure they tell people bad news anyway. There might be just this vague thing that's like, be careful on the 7th of this month. I would stay in bed if I were you, because I see dark things arising. Oh, anybody could say that. Of course, dark things are arising. We're in frickin' Eon 3. I would go to bed for the rest of your life because I see dark things arising. No shit. Really? Dark things arising? Wow. You know, but we're not subject to that ultimately. We're subject to Christ. We have the sheen of Christ surrounding us. So what do we have to worry about? You can't stop living for fear of dying. Oh, I got a couple of videos I got to link you to. There's this guy. I think he lives in California. Yeah. He's pretty funny. And he made these mocking videos about, he's drawing an analogy between cars, driving in cars, and getting the CB19er. Yeah, so It's pretty funny. Just watch it. Linked below, two videos. One's about fear. One's about being afraid of everything. And one's drawing an analogy between driving and getting CV19er. People say, oh, what if Trump gave it to Biden during the debate? Now, how about this? How about if Biden gave it to Trump during the debate? Well, let's get ourselves tested every 10 minutes. Why? Whenever you go to the doctor, what do? They try to upsell you. Would you like your blood tested? I think you need your hemoglobin analyzed. We're going to put your blood under a microscope, and we're going to zoom in and out. We're going to tell you exactly what's happening with you. How about you leave my blood in my body where it belongs, and as I live my life, I'll find out what's happening to me. You sure you don't want your cholesterol tested? Yes, I'm freaking positive I don't want my cholesterol tested. Another little pun. I'm positive I don't want it tested. Yeah. You sure you don't want your... We can check for cancer in every orifice of your body. No, that's okay. If I have cancer, I don't really want to know. I've told you that before. I was so happy one day. I remember 2 years ago, I made a video from my car, and I was glowing. Unlike me, most of the time. I mean, I'm pretty steady, but I'm not glowing. But I was glowing this particular day because I realized that I was never going to find out that I had cancer. And when I announced that on the show, I said, I'm never going to find out I have cancer. Well, how do you know you're never going to get cancer? I didn't say I was never going to get cancer. I said, I'm never going to find out I have cancer. Why? Because I'm not going to get tested. Why would you go to the doctor's office, line up, go through all that rigmarole, go through all that waiting and all the probes and all the metal and the liquids and the fluids and the needles and test to find out that you don't have cancer, or to find out that you do? And if you do have cancer, now that you're in the system, the proposition will be made to you to be cured by the system. Hey, you live by the system, you die by the system. Now they're going to flood your body with all their poisons, all their little fancy cures. We'll burn it out of you. We'll fix you. We'll burn it out of you. We call it chemotherapy. It's a nice word for we're going to burn it out of you, and chances are we're going to burn everything else too, and you'll die quicker from the chemotherapy than you do from the actual cancer or from the worry induced by the diagnosis, which it is quite possible is wrong. The diagnosis could be wrong. Many times it is. That's why we have the famous second opinion. But wait a minute. What if the second opinion says the same thing, but that's wrong too? And you go to the second opinion, but what if the second opinion was the first opinion? They send you for a second opinion, and the second opinion is the first one you went to in the first example, and it's a crossfire disaster. It's a CFCF, a crossfire cluster freak out. So there you have it. Why? Please tell me if I'm sick. Test me. How about no? Now we're back in Romans 11, and I told you that I was unhappy with the way a certain word was translated in the Concordant version. This is a very delicate thing. Remember, I'm in Romans 11. Paul is defending the fact that no, Israel's not cast away. Israel's not thrust away. She's cast away, but still on line, still on the hook, going to be reeled back in, because people would think that generally, because now in Paul's day, the nations have this giant, new, wonderful message of the grace of God. And God is doing wonderful things among them. And Israel's found, like, with her pants down in the background, like, what happened? Well, it looks like Spirit of God skipped over you and went to a bunch of Greeks. And you don't like that. In Paul's day, jealousy could have been in play, because Paul's saying that Israel was going to be made jealous. He says in the end of verse 11, in their offense, what's their offense? Well, in crucifying the Messiah. In their offense is salvation to the nations to provoke them to jealousy. But in order to be provoked to jealousy, the Israel types would first have to acknowledge that something wonderful has come to the nations. And they would have to look at themselves and think, oh man, we really blew it. Oh, what did we blow it? But to Israel types today don't think that, do they? No, they're arrogant, they're proud in their hardness. They're still waiting for their Messiah. They're pious, they're religious. These people aren't about to be made jealous by the fact that a large gaggle of people known as Christianity do recognize Jesus as the Messiah. Does that provoke them to jealousy today? No. They look down their nose at the dogs just like those Israelites pre-Paul did. And many of them post-Paul did. But there was a phenomenon happening in Paul's day where this thing was just now happening. It was brewing. And there was legitimate jealousy. Paul wanted to save some of his people if he could by provoking them to jealousy. In other words, look at this great stuff going on with the nations. And the Israel types in that, they would have been more astute. And they would have said, yeah, I know. Wow, it's really something. Like acknowledging it. And then looking at their own call and say, "Woo, you just missed your Messiah, didn't you? You did." But tell you what, you know, use this anguished feeling to grasp on, embrace your own calling. This is where I had the problem with the word discomfiture. Okay, I'm going to read Romans 11:12 from the Concordant Version now. If their offense, speaking of Israel, their offense, crucifying the Messiah, is the world's riches, because as I told you, because Israel rejected her Messiah, the kingdom which was near and at the door, relatively speaking, then receded, went back, because Israel was again, cast aside because of unbelief, just like they were before they came into the promised land the first time. They were already at the door. Remember, they got 40 years of wandering. If their offense is the world's riches, we have this message due to their defection. If their offense is the world's riches and their discomfiture, that's the word I was wrestling with, and their discomfiture, the nation's riches, how much rather that which fills them. See, this is what the people called preterists don't realize, is that Israel is eventually going to be filled. Preterists think that God's done with Israel and that all those annoying little Old Testament promises that he's going to bring Israel into the 1,000-year kingdom. Oh, well, it looks like these promises will be fulfilled spiritually in a different people who aren't Israelites. Yeah, they call this replacement theology, and it's a terrible mistake. Paul says here, how much of that which fills them. Let me go on in verse 13, then I'll come back to this word discomfiture, which is hetima in the Greek, or hetima if you like. I don't guarantee my Greek pronunciations. Never have, never will. Now to you, I am saying to the nations, and you have to remember when we get down to this other part about the boughs being, about branches being cut off, it's very scary for people who don't know that this section is about nations, not individuals. Okay, we're going to get to that on Monday. Now to you I'm saying to the nations, inasmuch as indeed I am the apostle of the nations, I am glorifying my dispensation, if somehow I should be provoking those of my flesh to jealousy and should be saving some of them. That's Paul talking contemporaneously, speaking of his fellow Israelites who were probably nagging him about what he was doing among the nations. For if they're casting, here's a key point, verse 15, if they're casting away is the conciliation of the world, what will the taking back be, if not life from among the dead? Life from among the dead, in this case, is kind of a figure of speech because it's not talking about literal resurrection of a body, but it is talking about the figurative resurrection of a nation. When a nation is born again, they will be taken back. This one verse does away with replacement theology. It does away with preterism. Preterists say that there's no 1,000-year kingdom. There's no thing about a special Israel. It's all figurative. No, it's not. It's going to happen. There's so many prophecies concerning it. But that doesn't seem to bother the preterists. So go back to this word discomfiture. Now, this is based on a Greek word, hetema, and the English elements are diminish effect. That E-M-A suffix has to do with the effect of something, and the prefix there, or I should say the root word, heta, is diminish, the diminish effect. So the definition, this is just a concordance translation, the concordant version, I should say. Their translation is discomfiture, but diminish, or I should say discomfiture, the definition is a feeling of unease or embarrassment, awkwardness. So Paul's talking about the discomfiture of Israel, their embarrassment, their awkwardness. It's like you get caught, you know, in an embarrassing situation. It's like, oh, I'm so embarrassed. I'm so diminished. I feel so terrible. Let me ask you, do any Jewish types come across this way today? No, are you kidding? They're so proud. They got their noses in the air. They wear their little hats and their black hats, some of the Orthodox people, and their beards and their phylacteries and their coats, and they're parading around. How are they feeling, awkward or diminished? Oh, I'm so embarrassed to be an Israelite. Are you kidding me? No, this is not going to happen until the snatching away of the body of Christ. It was probably happening in Paul's day because it was fresh, it was new, so some Israelites were actually having this feeling of this diminished effect, the effect of being nationally diminished. Israel has been nationally diminished, made small for the time being in the rearview mirror, 2,000 years in the rearview mirror after they rejected their Messiah. But they're coming back, and the image is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. But in the meantime, they're diminished. But now they're proud of it. For God's sake, they're proud to be cast away. Every time I see an Orthodox type with all this gear, all this Orthodox Jewish gear, I think, I feel sorry for the person. I see, you poor person, you think you're this great thing, but you're actually don't even know your own Messiah. It's like, how can you be proud to be so ignorant? That's right, I'm an ignorant person. Same thing I feel when people are with their masks. They're wearing their little CB19er masks in their cars by themselves, or the 20-year-old's riding his bicycle down the road with nobody within 80 feet of him, and he's wearing his mask and he's so proud. It's an arrogance thing. It's like, look at me, I care more about this disease. I'm obeying this fake national crisis. Look at me, I'm a good boy. I'm doing what the government tells me to do, and I care more about the health of everybody than you do. It's a pride thing, just like the garb of the Israelite types. It's a pride thing, but underneath it is this vast ignorance. Same with these mask people. No, you're just showing yourself, in my humble opinion, to be vastly ignorant. You have no idea. It's posing. You're virtue signaling, just like the Israel types are. They're virtue signaling. Look at me. Oh, look at me. I'm a Jewish type. Oh, I'm an Israel type, and I'm great. Well, you crucified your Messiah. Yes, but other than that, same with the CV19er mask people. Look at me. I'm so virtuous. And I want everybody to know that I care so much that I will wear a mask when it's 100 degrees out when I'm running down the road, because that's how much I care. No, that's how stupid you are. That is how stupid you are. And we will continue along this line, only maybe slightly more gracious, but not much, on Monday. Hey,